This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode, the January 2023 episode of Flight Training the Way I See It, with your host, that's me, Mike Shiflett. This is a podcast, a video podcast, about things going on in flight training, opinion, of course, and fact. So that's what we're going to be sharing with you today. Lots of stuff in today's show. It's pretty good. So let me go over the main topics that we're going to go through today. In the podcast. And if you subscribe to our newsletter, you'll have a hard copy of basically this podcast. We do as a paper or a PDF newsletter. You can get that at cfibootcamp.com, and you'll see a place up there to opt in to both that newsletter. And if you don't belong to our Power Hour group, you should definitely do that. That's on the very first page when you get there. There's a red bar across the top. It lets you opt in for the Power Hour. We will do this Saturday, this is 121st episode, 121, right? Like 121.5. Ooh, yeah, there you go. So it's our 121st episode, 1 hour short topics that we do every Saturday except for holidays. And they cover everything from, we did the mathematics behind 8-sum pylons, why it's divided by 11.3, did marketing 101 for instructors using a syllabus. We went through deep dives into Shandell's Lazy Eights, history of those, where they came from, how to do them properly, why we do steep spirals upwind and not downwind, reasons for that. So all these things, there are lots of hours. Now, you have to see those live if you want to see them for free. So the live ones are every Saturday from noon Eastern to 1 Eastern time. So that's 9 to... to 10 on the Pacific Standard Time, Pacific Daylight Time, Standard Time now. So that's that. If you want to see all 121 episodes, you've got to go to cfibootcamp.com. At the top, there's a place, a little button called Resources, and there's a drop-down menu, and you'll see Bootcamp Plus. Now, don't buy the subscription at that price. So that price is $22 a month. For you have to have more than the basic. It's called the pro or the next one up, whichever one that has all the power hours. And the basic one only has about 10. You can start there if you wanted to. But don't do that. Opt in for the power hour. Once you opt in for the power hour and you receive the outline back of what we did in the power hour, there's a link in there that gives you that same content for $9 a month. Okay? And you can cancel anytime you want. But that's a place to see these power hours. And they're really quite something. We've done so many, a lot of guest speakers. We had people from SAFE, people from Gary Reeves, from the IFR guy, Jerry GPS guy in the pink shirt. And we also have had Colby Tomlinson, who knows more about multi-engine flying than anybody probably on Earth. So he was doing some stuff. We'll have some other people this year. So anyway, there's always something going on the Power Hour. Speaking engagement. So this year I will be speaking at Sun and Fun. That's the very next engagement. That will be, actually, no, that's not true. I'm going to be speaking at FASANA, Flight School Association of North America, on a panel. We're yet to decide when that's going to be. It will happen at some point. So that's going to be Flight School Association of North America's conference, which, by the way, we're a sponsor of that organization, and they represent and do good work for flight schools, DPEs, flight instructors, but mainly the flight school market. And their conference is going to be March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Orlando. So I'll be there for that. So I'll speak at that. Next one I have is Sun and Fun. That'll be at the end of March. And then the third one is I'll be a speaker at Redbird Migration. So, and Sun and Fun, I'll speak on in the forums area. So that's where I'll be there. And then for Redbird Migration, I'll have a breakout room there. Breakout room, whatever that's going to look like. That's going to be in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where the home of AirVenture is, where the big air show and event once a year, which is in August usually. This is going to be in April. So that's what's happening. And I also will be speaking at EAA Oshkosh at various places. So there'll be some forums. I'm pretty sure I'll be able to get those. I haven't applied for those yet, but I'm usually pretty good about getting that. I have to do a lot of speaking. And Then we'll do something at maybe SAFE's dinner, some stand-up, aviation stand-up comedy, along with some stuff. So there's kind of things for you to to tune into. All right, well, let's look at what's going to happen for this video podcast. Okay, so we're going to review the changes to the private instrument, commercial, and flight instructor airplane category, ACSs, that are currently in the Federal Register for public comment. So I have all those. I've been through every single one of them, and I'm going to give you a little bit on each one, in particular the flight instructor one. I've got a takeaway there, too, that you can click on a space and get a copy of. If you're studying for your flight instructor certificate, you'll definitely want what I've uncovered in the new flight instructor airplane category, ACS. So we're going to do that first, all right? Talk about that a little bit. The next thing I'm going to talk about is how to maximize your results in accelerated flight training program, no matter where you go. I'm going to tell you, give you some really solid advice, set your expectations, because a lot of times we have people come to CFI Bootcamp with, we get them usually before. We tell them not to come if they're not able to do certain things, right? So setting the intention, making sure you get everything right so your chance of success is really high, that's what we're on about. And so we want to be able to make sure that we give you these tips and talk about maximizing your results in any accelerated flight training program. We've been in this business a very long time, so we kind of know. We're going to also talk about, I'm interested in a new product today. It's called Pathways. I haven't talked about it too much, but it's pretty stunning. It's really nice. Nothing in the industry like it, of course. We innovate. That's what CFI Bootcamp and Bootcamp Plus does. We innovate. So Pathways is our latest product. It's basically, we'll leave it before we talk about it. We'll just say it's a smart syllabus that has everything you need to teach any lesson in it already. And it doesn't require an internet connection. And you can use it in flight too. Ooh, we'll talk about that in a minute. Then we're going to have three pro tips for this month. So we've got some pro tips to give you like we do. And if we run out of those, we'll go to multi-engine. And if we run out of those, we'll go, we did multi-engine already. So we go seaplane, we'll go to whatever we can do. I don't think we're going to run out though. It's kind of unlikely. Okay, let's start off then with just talking about a review of the changes in the private instructor, commercial, and flight instructor PT or ACSs now. So the ACS that the FAA wants to incorporate by reference into the FAR are now available at FAA.gov. And I've got a link I'm going to tell you about. It's also in the hard copy of the newsletter, but I'll tell you how you can get it. So they intend to associate the ACS and PTSs with a regulation. So it's an interesting way to, normally you'd have to go through the complete rulemaking process for every single thing. So if you want to change an FAR, it's a big deal. It's going to take a long, long time. So they've got to run it through legal, they've got to run it through this, got to run it through that, they got to do maybe economic impact study and all sorts of things. So what the FAA has done with these ACSs is they're incorporating them by reference. So it says basically that this FAR, we're going to just change it slightly to say these things are associated with that FAR. So, and those things can then change over time without having to rewrite the entire rule each time. That's kind of the idea. Okay. So it's gonna. This has been done many times by the FAA before for various things. If you look in Part 91, there's a section on the requirement to, if you fly a Mitsubishi airplane, one of those MUs, to absolutely have to use the checklist that's in the airplane. That's by incorporation by reference. So they got that in as an FAR. Can you believe that or not? So things like that are in there. Okay. So then there's I made a pretty detailed comparison of the current flight instructor one. So the current flight instructor is PTS, now airplane single engine. Now this ACS is flight instructor, airplane category is what it says, okay? And I also have a marked up copy. I guess I'm gonna have to think about how to give you the link because I have to voice it to you. I guess the way to get the link is to go to our website, sign up for the newsletter, then you're just gonna get it, okay? Then you get it automatically. And you can, if you don't like the newsletter, whatever, you like this better, you can just opt out, it doesn't matter to us. You'll join the other 6,000 people on our newsletter or on our list there when you join. And we don't send you bogus stuff. We send you some deals sometimes. We send you some very pertinent information, that's for sure. Okay, let's go through each one of these. So for the private ACS, the only change I saw were missing elements in the appendix, like the checklist for the appointment with the examiner is gone. It's not there. The knowledge test appendix section isn't there and so on. And I assume they'll be incorporating those at some point because on the front of the documents, they all say draft, but not for public use. It's strange that the appendix is not complete in all of the ACSs or PTSs, which they're supposed to release. So I'm not sure why they've done that. I have made a comment on these ACSs in the public docket, which you can see. At the last time I checked, there were 14 public comments, and I was one of them. And one of them, I said to include a reference either in the checklist or throughout the document somewhere to say that electronic flight planning tools, EFBs, are an acceptable option to manually drawn flight plans everywhere. I want to make sure that no DPE out there can say you have to bring paper. That dog has had his day. I'm just telling you, that needs to be over with, okay? We have many, many different backup technologies where we don't need that. The chances of all of my stuff dying and not being able to bring up an FAA publication or a chart are a little bit smaller, much smaller, than you getting caught in a rainstorm with your FAR aim and your charts in hand, or the door blowing open, all your charts and everything flying out. I think my odds are better. So, and by the way, don't you want to fly with the most current? And who has the most accurate copies of whatever it is that we're being tested on? Where did those paper copies, where did they get the source material from? From my digital copies, right? From the digital copies FAA produces. There's no typesetting anymore. Those are PDFs or those are charts or whatever they are. They're in electronic format first. And then they're made on paper second, just so we know, okay? So the most original content is what I prefer to have. I have it on my iPad, I have it on my iPhone, and I have it other places, okay? So you have to develop an SOP to be able to use this stuff so that you don't get burned. But once you do that, you're good. All right, moving on. Let's take a look at the instant rating ACS. This one had something missing too, which was not very happy about. So let me just read here. The area of operation, they all follow the current one, so there's no appreciable changes here. But the appendix is missing a section that allows the LPV approach to be used in lieu of an ILS approach as long as the DA is 300 feet or lower. That's gone. So that means that, I don't know if they intended that, but my next public comment will be on that, on those things, these things I've found, because we really need that. In places like the Phoenix Valley down there where there's two ILSs that you can use. One is at Mesa Gateway, and the other's way down there at Casa Grande, so many miles away. Being able to use something like an LPV that goes down below 300 is like really, really important. It spreads out the training. It's safer, and it's better. LPV approaches are way better than ILSs. There's no wiggle. There's no mechanical things, no antennas on the ground that have to be aligned, you know. So that's the kind of stuff we want. Okay, so anyway, that's there. Also, they did change something else, which I thought was interesting. They defined who an evaluator is, which may be problematic. So I'll tell you I'm going to tell you that before they never defined who an evaluator was. Now, this is who it is. It's an aviation safety inspector, someone works for the FAA, a DPE, a flight instructor, which is new, with an instrument airplane rating on their flight instructor certificate, chief pilot at a 141 school, or a check airman. Those are all evaluators. And so when that word evaluator appears in the ACSs or PTSs or wherever it appears, you're now bound to do everything exactly like a DPE does. So all those notes about when you do an IPC, an instrument proficiency check, about doing two non-precision approaches, and one has, the notes say, one has to be without the use of radar vectors, the other one has to be, have a course reversal or procedure turn in it, one have to be without the use of autopilot. You know, you might make a case before because you weren't an evaluator, you just had to do the task, so you didn't have to do those things. Now you must, you're an evaluator. So that's a big change to me. And so I would caution you about that. So there's that. The next thing is everything appears to be the same for the commercial, except in the cross-country planning section of the ground portion. And why they didn't do this for private, I don't know. I'm on them, believe me, I'm on it. And I'll be speaking to the right people very shortly. There's a note that in that cross-country planning section in the ground that says this. It says, using an electronic flight plan is an acceptable option, right? And it says that to explain and to provide. It just basically says that you can use an electronic version of this stuff. I want them to say that for all the handbooks and for everything else we have to do as an instructor or as a student. I don't want you to be bringing a grocery cart full of paper to a check ride. You don't need it unless you really want to do that. I mean, that's up to you if you really want to. But my stuff's always up to date. Every minute is, or every minute as it can be, it's up to date. Now, for the flight instructor airplane single engine, there are some significant notable changes. And so for those of you studying, I wanted to give you my copy of them. If you go and get our newsletter at cfibootcamp.com and you opt into that, you'll get a paper, or not electronic copy of this paper, I said. Can you believe it? Okay. Anyway, and in there, you can click on the link, and it will be my marked up version of the draft ACS they're planning to release. And I have in yellow, and also I did it in Adobe Acrobat, so you can read the comments I put in there, right? So there's that, but I'm just going to give you four of the things is included. I see. And there's a mistake in the newsletter. So there are two versions of slow flight now. So they've included the one that we do now, which is basically flight at which any change of angle attack, any change in power or load factor, additional load factor, would cause the stall warning horn to activate. That's a speed. But they also have in task A, they have task A and B now in that section, slow flight. And the first one is slow at the slowest possible speed, where any addition in angle of attack, any addition of load factor or reduction in power would cause an immediate stall. So the examiner can pick either of those on the practical test. So for the flight instructor, ACS and testing only. It's not there for private, it's not there for commercial. So that's there. There's a note in the cross-country planning area of the ground portion that allows the use of electronic flight plan for explaining, demonstrating, and presenting the plan to the DPE. So we're getting closer to being able to shoot the C6B in the head, okay? We're getting closer. On the day that happens, I want to be the guy with the rifle on the firing squad. I don't need a blank. I'm going to put the real bullet in there when we put the E6B up, right? You can put 10 of us up there. I want a real bullet. I want to kill it so bad. Anyway, there's that. The third point was secondary stalls are to be performed to full stalls. So all the other demonstration stalls that are in the current PTS and now in the ACS, which are accelerated stalls, cross-controlled stalls, elevator trim stall, secondary stall, all those others can be to first indication, recovery at first indication. But this one, the secondary stall, has to be to a full stall. That's new, huh? I did my work, right? Last one is weather theory is now included. It says not, but it said in the newsletter, but now included to be tested if chosen. So there is a section similar to, if you look at the commercial ACS, you see the weather section. There's kind of theory in there first, and then some talk about using the current available information. So I took, basically in the PTS, they took out all the weather reports and forecasts, which were listed by name, like the radar summary chart, which no longer exists, the surface analysis chart, weather depiction, all those things. They took all those words out in the commercial ACS, and they said, you know, whatever the appropriate weather source is basically for today. And so they put that same thing in there. But when they did that, they added a section on theory, which was not in any of those ACSs or PTSs before. So now that could be tested. I don't know how much that's going to be tested. But, and by the way, in our power hours, if you're in our membership site, we did one on the five key things you need to understand about weather. And this, none of these things, they have nice, funny, catchy titles, but the content in there is quite good. The problem we have with teaching weather theory is that there's no basis, right? So it's like reading the Fundamentals of Instructing, the Aviation Instructor's Handbook. You read it, and after about three paragraphs, you said, did I just read what I read? I don't know. And then you read like a page and go, I think it said something like that a page ago? Three paragraphs ago? You can't get your head around it because you can't make it sing. You can't make it make sense yet. So what you need is a skeleton, a framework of weather, so that you can then put in the details, right? That's what you need. So there are like five things. Atmospheric stability, I cover that. You have to understand that or you're not going to understand a weather theory. How wind is generated, second thing, precipitation. So, and fronts. And so just there's five things in there. So that's in there. And so that's be a starting point if you really wanted to start understanding. Then read the weather section, the PHAC or aviation, the new handbook from FAA Aviation Weather. The Aviation Weather Handbook, which they just released here in December. And also, by the way, flash, news flash. It's not in the newsletter, but I'm going to tell you, FAA just released on December the 29th an update to the Aeronautical Chart User's Guide. That's also available at FAA.gov. So that's a new one. I haven't been through it. I don't anticipate they changed a lot, but they did talk in the beginning about what they changed. So they did say what they changed. So there's that. Okay. So now, if you want to comment, please don't in the public document, in docket. So what the FAA does, they publish what rule change you're going to make in the Federal Register, and they leave it open for public comment. Now, AOPA and the ACS Working Group, it was supposed to close on January the 11th, and they got them to do another month. So basically, February 11th is the last day to comment. I look sometimes, and I see some not very well thought out comments. I mean, you're free to comment if you want to, because that's your right to do it. But you know, I don't know, some of those comments that I'm reading and about ready to read, I'm sure, there's not a lot of thought that went into that. There was just reaction. It was like, this is an overreach, or this is this, or this is a that, or there's some detail and something they didn't read in the new ACS. It's not really what they thought. So the best place is to call up AOPA, SAFE, or NAFI, and then go through them and say, look, there's a thing I think that we should, and they would tell you, okay, make a public comment on that, or don't. If you belong to AOPA, you will be part of, you can call up, and it's called the Pilot Information Center. And it's a wonderful resource. 12 CFIs work there, and they've answered questions from regulations to endorsements to anything you can imagine over a lot of years. And they have a lot of information there. So chances are, whatever you want to know, they know already. And so running it by them the first time before you go sit and comment would be a good idea. Say, hey, this is what I think. And they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, we already did that. Or that's a great idea. So do that. Same with legal interpretations. Go through AOPA first, please. We don't want a legal interpretation that affects our industry the wrong way, even though you thought you were doing the right thing. Okay? Now, the public comment period has been extended until February the 11th. So, and in a paper copy of the newsletter, you will get that link. You'll find it easy enough. If you go to FAA.gov, it's in the Federal Register, so... you can go also to FASANA, Flight School Associated North America. They have a newsletter, and the link was in there. And anyway, you'll get it in our newsletter. So I know you'll get that. Both my marked up copy, that's the only place you'll get it, is our newsletter. All right, let's talk about maximizing your results in accelerated flight training. By the way, just before I go on into this, I made about 58 comments on the 55 or 58 comments on that marked up document. So some things significant, other things just, that's interesting, like the FOI that changed a little bit. they added an extra task to be tested. That's not so good. Anyway, things like that. It'd be good to have a copy if you're training for your CFI. All right, here's about six things I have here that will help you get through any accelerated program, particularly ours, and get the desired result. Okay, so let's talk about that. And I'm talking, this is for flight instructor. But some of it will definitely transfer over to if you're doing a celebrated program for any other kind of thing. So get at least 5 hours of right seat time before you start the program. This removes the uncertainty when you know there's a check ride date. So when this check ride is set and you're kind of questioning like, oh, how long is it going to take me to get this? You know, what if there's not enough time? Oh my word. If you get the right seat proficiency, just 5 hours to where you're just okay at it, you'll say, oh, okay, in another 5 or so hours, I'll have this. So it takes that uncertainty out. Get the spin training and the endorsement done where you are. This can save you a day of training with us. And we need a high ceiling and good visibility, right? And that usually is okay, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes the airplane, instructor, and weather don't happen to coincide, right? And then we're stuck for a little bit till we can get it done. And then if you have it done already, it doesn't matter how many weather delays you had at home, instructor delays, or, you know, because you have it done by the time you come. Okay. Third is get an honest, thorough flight review and tell them what you're doing. You're going to come do a CFI program, so you want to evaluate it on the commercial and private maneuvers, and you want to make sure that you can do all those from the left, preferably the right seat, but from the left, to the ACS or better standards. Because remember, the ACS represents the worst pilot you want to make, right? That's the minimum certification criteria. So you should really be doing better than that. If you're not, I think you should change the way you think about flying, because that's the minimum certification. So I don't think you want to be minimum, do you? Our crowd usually isn't like that. Our crowd's usually like, you know, we're gonna put a little bit of extra oomph into it, right? Especially me. All right, number four. Get an IPC if you're going to be doing our double I program. Getting instrument proficient is a dice roll here because a number of days for the CFI isn't many. Our CFI course is only 3 days long. And then you put some flying with it, in about 5 days we're done. If it's taking an extra 3 days to get you instrument proficient, we've already missed our opportunity for the flight test, which is set, and we're wasting a lot of time. So come in instrument proficient or show up before the class with 2 or 3 days, not hours, days, so we can get you spun up to really good IFR skills. Now, again, don't get yourself current. This doesn't count. If you go out and do 6 approaches, this is a waste. You can do the same approach 6 times and an approach you know very well. And it doesn't really, it's not really helping. A little bit. But it's not really going for the real proficiency. You want to do the equivalent of an IFR flight test. So using the ACS, you want to, you know, do a flight test just like you did with holding everything in there. A surprise hold, not one you know, those kind of things. And then you'll be super successful. It's going to be less stress on you. Right, you need to be proficient. Don't you figure you want to be proficient when you teach IFR anyway? Yeah, right, you want to. All right, number 5 is make notes of any weak areas you or your flight instructor back home notice. That helps fine-tune the training for you. So this means that if you come in with some document which says this is what I'm not very good at or what I'm good at, either way, we can fine-tune your training. And that can go a long way because then we kind of can tailor it for a better result for you, right? That's a really good idea. Now, if you're doing our online course, I encourage you to have like an electronic notebook or paper, if you're going to use paper, and have notes about what was good and what wasn't very good and what you think, I'm going to need some help on this. That really helps us a lot in helping with your training. All right, number 6, last one. Don't bring anybody with you or have people come to visit while you're training. I know you want everybody want to come to Miami. And when they come to Miami Beach, they go there. They think they're still in Miami. You're not. Just so you know, you're on an island, the whole different town. So you simply won't have enough time to do anything but train. There isn't any time. And so, yeah, I mean, if you have to, you have to make the understanding that whoever's there, if there's time, if. There might be time just to have dinner. That's it. Not much more than that. But don't let people bog you down with the things they want to do or... you know, make sure that you're dedicating the full time to flight training. All right, new topic. So that'll really help you. I think if you do those things, and again, you have to have a lot of stamina for these programs. If you're a person who can only like fly an hour, go home and you're exhausted, and can't study for more than an hour, this is not for you. this is not come there and you get the rating no matter what your effort is. It's not like that. We just compress the time, and most people can do it. Especially when they get their head around the idea that this is going to take a lot of effort. But it's condensed and it's done, right? So in 2 weeks, we finish you. It's hardly ever that we don't finish a CFI at the end of 2 weeks, sometimes sooner. But it's because the online course, because you got 42 hours of instruction ahead of time. Then you come to our 7-day put it together class, which basically shows you how to solo students, how to take people from different categories, including glider to airplane, single engine land, the training, the endorsements, what's going to be tested, and then teaching from our lesson plan. So using our syllabus with the lesson plans, and when you do that, you come out kind of functional. So, you know, otherwise, if you're just sitting there in our class listening to lecture, it's not going to be good enough. It's just you can't get all this information by just hearing it. You've got to use it. That's what the 7-day class is for. And the flight sprinkled in between, that's the easy part. So to help out with this project and help out with the industry, let's talk about a disconnect. So a disconnect in our industry is we have these lesson plans, right? We have them, you have them, you may have them. And these things were created for one purpose, really. They're created so that you could get through a check ride. You'd be able to step through a lesson plan and give this examiner a lesson on whatever it's gonna be, chandelles, 8-some pylons, whatever. And it would have enough detail in there to also prove that you understood the aerodynamics or whatever it was of this maneuver really well, right? So it had all those moving parts. Basically, I'll tell you what it wasn't. It wasn't a lesson plan that you're actually going to give to a student on your first day of teaching. Ooh, that left a mark right there, didn't it? You know why? Because the lesson plans are way too big. So when we started making this new product called Pathways, it's a pathway to get your private pilot certificate, commercial pilot certificate. It's a pathway for the instructor to get you through this training and use a syllabus and keep you on track and have all the content that you need to teach an entire lesson that's there lesson by lesson whether it's flight or ground, what to say in the airplane, the physical words to say in the airplane, the ability to grade out a lesson if you want or not, optional, be able to track the time you spent or not, optional. It has checklists in there. So when you're ready to solo a student, it asks you, did you do these things? Did you do that thing? What date did you do these? What date did you do that? And then, boom, the endorsements magically populate with the student's name and your name on there. How you like that? That's pretty cool. Do that same for the cross countries. Same for additional 90-day endorsements. The same for the end-of-course private pilot endorsements. All those checklists in there. And then pilots, we like checklists because we know how to use those. And we're good about using them. So the problem we had when we first decided to make this product is I laid in the ground for stage one, stage one, lesson one, which is a pretty big lesson. It's a lot of aerodynamics, aircraft systems. And so I just pulled out our lesson plans and resources from our other book called 172S Systems Guide. And it was 65 pages long. The one lesson was 65 pages long. And as an instructor, I looked at this and said, would I use this? And my answer was a resounding no. I'm not going to scroll through 65 pages to find the one image I might like and read that stuff for every single maneuver. And that was just the ground. The flight side was on top, right? So it's going to take a number of hours to get through this. No, I mean more, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I don't know, I mean a lot. So then it became apparent that that's really not what we want, because I wouldn't use it. So what I want is lay in an image, lay in some talking points or things over that, put the images in the right places so when I'm talking about it, I can show the student on my iPad. And the talking points, I'm not, a lesson plan, I had the guy who returned an instrument lesson plan the other week ago, and he said, I didn't like them. And I said, why? He said, because they didn't explain anything. Okay, if you need a lesson plan to explain how to do something, you need to know the content. You're the teacher. The lesson plan isn't to teach you anything. It's for you to be able to teach a student. It tells you the order and what to teach. It doesn't tell you how to teach it, because that's very subjective, right? So it depends on the kind of learner you have. If it's a classroom setting, is this a visual learner, kinesthetic learner? Has this learner coming in for a flight review and already knows this stuff? Is it a person who's just doing it for the first time? There are too many variables to be able to say teach it this way. So a lesson plan has to be an outline, right? And tell you what to do and how long things would take, but not much more than that. So this content we laid in, we had to generate it from scratch. And we've been doing it for the past 3 months, and it's coming out really nice. It's really, really nice. And our next, well, then when you subscribe, you'll be getting a link to see what it kind of looks like. And a small video will be in there too. But anyway, this thing, just as talking points. So imagine, you know, it just says wing plan form, then it has an image of all the wing plan forms, and you talk about them, right? So you have everything you need. You can draw on it. You can take, you can project it up to a monitor if you want. You can connect it to ForeFlight in the document section. It'll run in there if you want. And the cool thing about it is all this grading, if you want to do it, and all this stuff, all runs natively. It's just a PDF file. It's not connected to the internet. You don't need an internet connection to do any of it. All the content is inside already. So when you go to the airplane, nothing is internet connected. You just do it, and it saves it, right? It's running Java. So what a cool thing. So everything you need is in there. So that's a problem I've been trying to solve for a lot of years. Because if you try to do it, just try it. Take your lesson plans, take lesson plans anybody has. Go get ASA's syllabus, which you can download for free, asatofly.com, for a private pilot. Look at lesson number one and try to mesh your lesson plans that you created or that you have against all those things you have to do. And you'll see that you're going to be on the ground for about 10 hours doing something like that. It just doesn't work. So this is what we did to make it work. And it fits within the time. So that's what's coming. So Pathways is coming first for private pilot. So it covers the student and private pilot section. It's coming in February. And it will be released at Fasana at March the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, or before, but that's where we plan on releasing it, in Orlando. And there'll be a video showing it being used in next month's newsletter. So, and there'll be some, I have some links spelled out, some easy links to follow, so you can just listen to them, write them down if you want to. But again, if you go to our news, our website, cfibootcamp.com, and then you register for our newsletter, you'll get all this stuff. All right, now we're going to look at the three tips, and we'll call it done here, the pro tips for this month. So the first pro tip is when doing a soft field takeoff in a 172, there's no checklist procedures in the normal procedures part of the POH, right? Have you been in there? You see one for short field, but you don't see one for soft field. So is there none?
No, there is. It's hidden. It's hidden.
Where is it? It's under the amplified section of the checklist. Maybe you didn't even know that was there. Right after you have the basic checklist, which is what you'd use in the airplane, the next section, right following that, says amplified procedures. And then if you look under wing flap settings, it will tell you what to do on rough fields or fields that are improved. So it tells you the wing flap setting to use and how to do it, the procedure. So that's interesting. That's pro tip number one. So if you're gonna do a soft field, review that. In light training airplanes, tip number two. In light training airplanes like the Cessna series, 152, 172, 182, Pipers, the Archer, Warrior, Cherokee 140, any of those, Dakota, during an engine failure, if you put the trim, just start rolling it full up, by the time you get to the stop, or when you get to the stop, if you let it go, it will be at about best glide speed. So if you just want to relieve some workload, you know, just start trimming the nose up, make sure you have airspeed, and then it'll settle about your best glide speed. Now, this does not work in the Piper products, in the Beechcraft, Baron, or the Bonanza. That trim is super sensitive. If you try to do that, you'll probably go vertical. So try it in your airplane and go slow at first. If it works for you in the airplane you're using, great, then you know. So most training airplanes, like I told you, the Cessnas and Pipers, it'll work just like magic. Very good, right? Nice thing to know. The third thing, this is a kind of a weird thing. We have a book called Airman Etiquette that we give a lot of times as a bonus for free, and it covers all the underwritten rules in aviation. For example, have you been taught not to push on the spinner? You probably say, oh, don't push on the spinner. But where is that written anywhere? Where is it? Is it in the airplane flying handbook? Nope. Is it in the Cessna POH? Nope. So how do you know this? It's just, you don't, right? So I wrote a book that has all those kind of things in it. It's called Airman Etiquette. Anyway, one of the things there, this, close the doors on a 172 except for when you're getting in or getting out of them. Keep the doors closed. I'll tell you why. If you leave them open during pre-flight and the wind catches that door, or you in any position where the wind can catch the door, what will happen is the door will come open and there's no stops. In the 172 N models, there is a stop, but the rest of them, there's no stops. So what will happen is that door will come open and the only thing that will keep it from actually separating from the airplane are the hinges. So it's going to push against the hinges really hard. And if the wind is strong enough, it will do one of two things. It will tweak the hinges, or it will rip the hinge off of the fuselage if it's been done enough times. Those hinges are $1,600 each, and you need two of them. If there's fuselage repair to be done, that's on top of that. You have new hinges plus that repair. So keep the doors closed where they can't be accessed to the wind. That's, again, underwritten stuff. Okay, that's it for this week's of Flight Training the Way I See It. We'll see you next month with another episode of Flight Training the Way I See It. This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinions.